Welcome to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP LP Fayette. Brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member, Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and historian. This edition of Local Voices airs every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. and focuses on a glance back at the music and history of World War II as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. Thank you again for tuning in to this special edition, A Glance Back, here on Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP.
When the Führer says, he is the master race, we heil, heil, right in the Führer's face. Not to love the Führer is a great disgrace, so we heil, heil, right in the Führer's face.
Thank you.
taking a glance back at history with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Till you and I recapture our happiness once more, the joys I knew and shared with you are well worth waiting for. Till all our prayers are answered and all our dreams come true, I'll find my consolation in memories of you. I'll treasure all those memories of things we used to do, till all our prayers are answered and all our dreams come true. Time and tide may now divide us, but one day you'll see. Time and tide will bring you back to me. It may not be tomorrow, but we'll come smiling when all our prayers are answered and all our dreams come true. Time and tide may now divide us, but one day we'll see. Time and tide will bring you back to me. It may not be tomorrow, but we'll come smiling when all our prayers are answered and all our dreams come true.
I'm gonna see my baby. I'm gonna see my baby when I get home on Victory Day. I really missed my baby. I'm gonna kiss my baby and live in love that U.S. way. Females, all right when you just have something to say, but female ain't like when your arms round your honey and you're home to stay. I'm gonna see my baby. I really miss my baby. I wanna kiss my baby when I get home on Victory Day. Females, all right when you just have something to say. But female ain't like when your arms round your honey and you're home to stay. I'm gonna see my baby. I've really missed my baby. I'm gonna kiss my baby when I get home on Victory Day. I'm gonna get back to the double track, see my friends down on the main stem, drop by the joint, say hello to the boss, grab my chicken, say let's get lost when I get home on Victory Day.
You are listening to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP. Now, our local historian, Jim Steele, will take us back to the age of World War II.
This is KPIP Radio, 94.7 FM. And today, we continue with Local Voices, A Glance Back. I'm Jim Steele reporting under the sponsorship of the Boonslick Historical Society. Well, those who listened a week ago will recall we began to take a look at the history of higher education in Howard County, and we will continue with that in just a few moments. But first, we think it's really appropriate to give a shout-out to the memory of Missouri's favorite son, President Harry Truman, whose birthday was last Saturday and observed as a state holiday the Friday before. Truman, as you probably know, lived from May 8, 1884, born in Lamar, Missouri, to December 26, 1972. He was the 33rd President of the United States, serving from 1945 to 1953, and of course succeeding to the presidency upon the death of Franklin D. Roosevelt after serving very briefly as the 34th Vice President. One of his key accomplishments was implementing the Marshall Plan to rebuild the economy of Western Europe, in addition to establishing the Truman Doctrine and NATO to contain communist expansion. He proposed numerous liberal domestic reforms, but few were enacted by the conservative coalition that dominated Congress, not unlike some of the problems we face today. Well, Truman had grown up in Independence, Missouri, and during World War I fought in France as a captain in the Army Field Artillery. Returning home, he opened a haberdashery in Kansas City, which eventually failed, and later was elected as a Jackson County official in the year 1922, a post we now call presiding commissioner. Truman was elected to the U.S. Senate from Missouri in 1934 and later gained national prominence as chairman of what was called the Truman Committee, aimed at reducing waste and inefficiency in wartime contracts during World War II. Soon after succeeding to the presidency, he authorized the first and only use of nuclear weapons and more. Truman's administration engaged in internationalist foreign policy and renounced isolationism. He rallied his New Deal coalition during the 1948 presidential election and won a surprise victory that secured his own presidential term. After the onset of the Cold War, Truman oversaw the Berlin airlift and, of course, as we mentioned, the Marshall Plan. When North Korea invaded South Korea in 1950, he gained United Nations approval to intervene in the Korean War. He did not ask for congressional approval, and as the war stalemated, his popularity unfortunately fell. However, his administration successfully guided the U.S. economy through the post-war economic challenges. The expected post-war depression never happened. In 1948, he submitted the first comprehensive civil rights legislation. It did not pass, but he instead issued Executive Orders 9980 and 9981 to begin racial equality in federal agencies and the military. Alleged corruption in the Truman administration became a central campaign in the 1952 presidential election. He was eligible for re-election in 52. However, with weak poll numbers, he decided not to run. Republican Dwight Eisenhower attacked Truman's record and won easily. Truman went into a financially difficult retirement marked by the founding of his presidential library and later the publication of his memoirs. When he left office, Truman's presidency was heavily criticized, although critical reassessment of his tenure has been favorable. As a note in passing, the Truman Library in Independence is nearing a complete refurbishing and is expected to reopen soon again in Independence. And now we'll listen to excerpts from President Truman's inaugural address in January 1949.
Mr. Chief Justice, fellow citizens, I accept with humility the honor which the American people have conferred upon me. I accept it with a resolve to do all that I can for the welfare of this nation and for the peace of the world. The American people desire and are determined to work for a world in which all nations and all peoples are free to govern themselves as they see fit and to achieve a decent and satisfying life. Above all else, our people desire and are determined to work for peace on earth, a just and lasting peace based on genuine agreement freely arrived at by equals. In the pursuit of these aims, the United States and other like-minded nations find themselves directly opposed by a regime with contrary aims and a totally different concept of life. That regime adheres to a false philosophy which purports to offer freedom, security, and greater opportunity to mankind. Misled by that philosophy, many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward. That false philosophy is communism. Our allies are the millions who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Steadfast in our faith in the Almighty, we will advance toward a world where man's freedom is secure. To that end, we will devote our strength, our resources, and our firmness of resolve. With God's help, the future of mankind will be assured in a world of justice, harmony, and peace.
Again, that was former President Harry S. Truman speaking at his inaugural address in January of 1949. And we'll remind you again that this is KPIP Radio 94.7 FM. And now we continue with Local Voices, A Glance Back, as we bring you part two of the history of higher education in Howard County, and picking up with the establishment of then what was known as Central College. Now, as you may recall from last week, in September of 1852, the St. Louis Conference of the Methodist Episcopal Church South proposed organization of a single Methodist college for both the St. Louis and Missouri conferences. Now, this denomination was, of course, one of the forerunners of today's United Methodist Church. Well, this action from 1852 apparently was the earliest written record of the future Central College, although it would be many years before such a single college existed. So the Missouri Conference accepted the idea and agreed to cooperate with the St. Louis Conference in establishing such a college. A rivalry ensued between St. Charles and Fayette for the location of this proposed college. It was a debate that Fayette won largely because of its more central location. Two men, Nathan Skerritt and David Rice McAnally, formally launched a committee that on April the 13th, 1853, outlined plans for the establishment of a college in Fayette. In the meantime, the Howard High School building in Fayette had burned down in January of 1854. In its reconstruction, the male and female components of the old school were separated. The Howard Female College emerged under the leadership of one Professor Lucky, while Professor Pritchett and Nathan Skerritt organized the men's college. Skerritt became the first president of what became Central College for Men. A meeting of the curators on February the 4th, 1854, led to the establishment of Central, a name formally recognized with the St. Louis Methodist Conference in October. Well, the next 3 years witnessed fundraising and renovation and construction of campus buildings, as well as curriculum and faculty development. The first classes convened on September the 18th, 1857, under the tutelage of 3 faculty members and 144 students. But the Civil War was a bitter blow to higher education in the county, as in elsewhere, where it forced the closure of both Howard Female College and Central College between the years of 1861 and 1865. Once the war was over, the college buildings were in disrepair. However, Professor Pritchett managed to reopen Howard High School in the Howard Female College buildings. But soon the reopening of colleges eclipsed that. Pritchett left Fayette in 1866 and joined one J.O. Swinney in a new college at Glasgow called Pritchett College, which included Morrison Observatory. Now, we'll have more on the observatory at a later date. Later, Pritchett College made an unsuccessful effort to merge with Central College, but eventually in the year 1922, Pritchett College failed financially. However, in 1926, encouraged by Pritchett and Morrison, Central College took over the observatory and moved it to Fayette in 1935, where it remains today. Meanwhile, in Fayette, the war had left Howard Female College seriously indebted. In 1869, a man by the name of Moses U. Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, who lived in Roachport, purchased the property and turned it over to the Methodist Church. So it grew during the late 19th century as a junior college and formally changed its name to Howard Payne Junior College in the year 1892. Formally accredited in 1923 as Howard Payne College, it merged with Central soon thereafter over a period of several years. It might be added that much of Howard Payne's academic emphasis had been on music and other arts, and that aspect of its curriculum carried over to Central, and this thus provided much of the foundation for CMU's ultimate reputation as one of the state's outstanding music schools through its Swinney Conservatory of Music. Although the founders of Central College had sought to make it the single Methodist college in Missouri, all efforts toward that goal floundered in the 19th century. Instead, several Methodist colleges emerged around the state, but Central College President Paul H. Lynn, who served from 1913 to 24, Lynn Memorial Church is named after him, Dr. Lynn, with the strong encouragement of Bishop William F. McMurray, pursued this idea more vigorously of making it one college. McMurray succeeded Lynn as Central's president, and he served from 1924 to 1930, as well as continuing to serve as the presiding bishop. So, at that point, they had completed the unification not only of Howard Payne and Central, but of several other Methodist colleges around the state, and this had all taken place by 1927. Now, a person who played an especially important role in the college during the first half of the 20th century was one Erastus P. Puckett, better known as E.P. Puckett, who served as dean of the college for much of that time, and in 1924 and again in 1947 and 50, he served as the acting president of Central. And as you might know, Puckett Fieldhouse is named in his honor. Well, the Great Depression brought hard times to the college, as it did many others, as it suffered falling enrollments. The president who took over in 1930, President Robert H. Ruff, did his best to keep the college going until his death in 1942. He was succeeded by one Harry S. DeVore of Texas, and unfortunately, his administration was somewhat tumultuous, including getting through World War II, and with the college probably saved by having the Navy V-12 program during those wartime years. However, its small endowment had declined dangerously by 1947 when the term of President Harry DeVore ended with his sudden death. After an extended search, Dr. Ralph L. Woodard of Yale University, he'd been head of the Divinity School there and also a Central alum, was chosen as his successor. Ralph had graduated in 1931. Serving for 20 years from 1950 to 1970, Woodward restored the financial integrity of the school and quadrupled the enrollment, although at $4.5 million when he left office. It still remained too small for a college of this type. Early in his administration, he inaugurated racial integration with the first Afro-American student joining the student body in 1953. Enrollments grew impressively during Woodward's time, briefly nearing 1,000 students in 1965, this before dropping off slightly thereafter. He constructed several new dormitories to house the increased enrollments, as well as other new buildings and renovations of older ones. He also sought to bring closer relations and more financial support from the Methodist Church when, with the approval of the board, he changed the name of the institution to Central Methodist College in 1961. The student revolutions that were sweeping the country in the 1960s brought some changes to Central as well, other schools as well too, including greater student participation. Beginning in 1970, President Harold P. Hamilton took over and served for 6 years. His administration was not considered a particularly good time. During the administration of President Joe A. Howell, 1977 to 1995, CMC began the establishment of regional satellite campuses around the state of Missouri, in Columbia, St. Louis, and elsewhere. This picked up notably after 1995, when Dr. Marianne Inman became president and served until 2013, by which time she'd increased the regional sites from 2 to 13. There were also substantial increases in online courses, often along with other technological advances. Under the leadership, modest graduate programs emerged, starting with the degree of Master of Education in 1996. By virtue of these additional programs and campuses, in 2004, the college became Central Methodist University. Inman also succeeded in reversing the deficit spending of the previous administration, achieving positive annual net revenues and tripling the endowment. There was noticeable progress in the physical plant with several new buildings and a general beautification of the campus. Enrollment grew to exceed 1,100 on the Fayette campus, with substantial technological upgrades coming along. Under her leadership, CMU also expanded health care curriculums and expansion of athletic facilities and programs, as well as improving town-gown relations. Her successor, Dr. Roger Drake, beginning in 2013, has continued the construction and renovation of campus buildings and added another regional campus, bringing the total to 14. While CMU had become the only institution of higher education in Howard County, the proximity of the University of Missouri in Columbia and its extension service in Howard County meant that many county students attended the state university. In 2012, for example, nearly 100 students from the county were attending at MU in Columbia, or one of its branches, including 74 undergraduates and 24 graduate students from this area. However, enrollment has continued to grow under President Drake, who has received widespread recognition for his work, including guiding the university through the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's a look at the history of higher education in Howard County for the Boonslick Historical Society and for KPIP 94.7 FM. I'm Jim Steele reporting for Local Voices, A Glance Back.
That was our Glance Back in Time with Jim Steele, president of the Boonslick Historical Society. This series with Jim Steele will continue every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. during Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP.
Today's the day that all us cats must surely do our bit. We all must do our share so Uncle Sam can hit. Save up all your pots and pans. Save up every little thing you can. Don't give it away. Get some cash for your trash, yeah. Save up all that old newspaper. Save and pile it like a high skyscraper. Don't give it away. Get some cash for your trash. In between we'll do some loving. White handsome turtle doving. Will you listen to me, honey? Get plenty of the folding money. Save up all your iron and tin. But when you go to turn it in, don't give it away. Get some cash for your trash. Thank you. and some turtle doving. When you listen to me, honey, get plenty of the folding money. Save up all your iron and tin. But when you go to turn it in, don't give it away, no, no. Get some cash, get some cash, get some cash for your trash. Get plenty of it, too.
When the roses bloom again and the fields feel the plow, we will meet again, sweetheart, somehow. When the birds take back the sky and the night smiles above, we'll be free again to live and love. Until then, oh, how I'll miss you. The laughter and tears we used to share. Till then, in dreams I'll kiss you and seal every dream with a prayer. When the roses bloom again, when the world starts anew, be waiting here, sweetheart, for you.
The greatest generation lives here on 94.7 KPIP.
Sunshine. Oh, baby, come back, or you'll break my heart for me.
Camp that night, wondered what tomorrow'd bring. A banjo chord came through the blue, and I heard somebody sing. Little bit lonesome, little bit blue, cleaning my rifle and dreaming of you. Beautiful memories coming to view while cleaning my rifle and dreaming of you. That goodbye kiss you left on my lips is still just like new, and the dream you left in my heart will someday come true. But in the meantime, think of me, do, cleaning my rifle and dreaming of you.
Now it's time to take a look back at the events that shaped this country and the world with This Week in History on KPIP's A Glance Back. Well, starting in 1648 now, Margaret Jones of Plymouth is found guilty of witchcraft and is sentenced to be hanged. In 1681, Louis XIV sends an expedition to aid James II in Ireland, and as a result, England declares war on France. Moving to 1702, the War of Spanish Succession begins. In 1756, Britain declares war on France. In 1768, by the Treaty of Versailles, France purchases Corsica from Genoa. In 1773, to keep the troubled East India Company afloat, the British Parliament passes the Tea Act, taxing all tea in the American colonies. Jumping to 1775, American troops capture Fort Ticonderoga from the British. 1792, merchants from the New York Stock Exchange, it's formed at 70 Wall Street. In 1796, English physician Edward Jenner gives the first successful smallpox vaccination. Jumping now to 1804, the Lewis and Clark Expedition officially begins the Corps of Discovery, and it departs from St. Charles, Missouri. In 1812, British Prime Minister Spencer Perceval is shot by a bankrupt banker in the lobby of the House of Commons. In 1820, the U.S. Congress designates the slave trade as a form of piracy. In 1840, Mormon leader Joseph Smith moves his band of followers to Illinois to escape the hostilities they had experienced in Missouri. In 1858, Minnesota is admitted as the 32nd U.S. state. In 1861, Britain declares its neutrality in the American Civil War. In 1863, at the Battle of Champions Hill, Union General Ulysses S. Grant repulses the Confederates, driving them into Vicksburg. In 1865, Union cavalry troops capture President Jefferson Davis near Irvinville, Georgia. In 1868, President Andrew Johnson is acquitted during Senate impeachment by only one vote cast by Edmund G. Ross. In 1869, the Central Pacific and Union Pacific Railroads meet at Promontory Point in Utah. 1875, the first Kentucky Derby is run in Louisville. In 1881, Frederick Douglass is appointed Recorder of Deeds for Washington, D.C. Going up to 1886, Emily Dickinson dies in Amherst, Massachusetts, where she lived in seclusion for the previous 24 years. In 1897, Italian native Marconi ascends the first communication by wireless telegraph. That same year, in 1897, Stars and Stripes Forever by John Philip Sousa is performed for the first time, this in Philadelphia. In 1912, the Royal Flying Corps is established in England. In 1913, Igor Sikorsky flies the first four-engine aircraft. In 1920, Joan of Arc is canonized in Rome. In the year 1924, J. Edgar Hoover is appointed head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. In 1828, WGY, experimental television station in Schenectady, New York, begins regular TV programming. In 1930, one Ellen Church becomes the first airline stewardess. In 1932, the sad story, the body of Charles Lindbergh's baby is found, who had been kidnapped. In 1935, Alcoholics Anonymous is founded in Akron, Ohio, by a fellow by the name of Bill W., a stockbroker, and Dr. Bob S., a heart surgeon. In 1940, Holland surrenders to Germany during World War II. In 1940 also, Winston Churchill succeeds Neville Chamberlain as the British Prime Minister. Again in 1940, German forces begin a blitzkrieg with the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg skirting France's supposedly impenetrable Maginot Line. In 1941, England's House of Commons is destroyed during the worst of the London Blitz. 550 German bombers drop 100,000 incendiary bombs. In 1942, after the U.S. had entered World War II, the United States begins rationing of gasoline. In 1943, Axis forces in North Africa surrender. In 1948, Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion establishes the State of Israel. And in 1949, the Berlin blockade ends. Jumping up to 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously rules for school integration in Brown versus Board of Education. 1958, Sputnik III is launched by the Soviet Union. Jumping to 1961, a bus carrying black and white civil rights activists is bombed and burned in Alabama. In 1968, peace talks between the United States and North Vietnam begin in Paris. In 1973, the U.S. space station Skylab is launched. Also in 1973, the Senate Watergate Committee begins its hearings. And in 1981, Pope John Paul II survives an assassination attempt. And in 1994, Nelson Mandela is sworn in as South Africa's first black president. Tune in next week for another look back at the events that shaped this country and the world with This Week in History on KPIP's A Glance Back.
Stage door canteen. I left it there with a girl named Eileen. I kept her serving donuts till all she had were gone. I sat there dunking donuts till she caught on. I must go back to the army routine. And every doughboy knows what that will mean. A soldier boy without a heart has two strikes on him from the start, and my heart's at the stage door canteen. Old Mr. Absent-minded, that's me. Just as forgetful as I can be. I've got the strangest sort of a mind. I'm always leaving something behind. Doughboy knows what that will mean. A soldier boy without a heart has two strikes on him from the start, and my heart's at the stage door
down, wow, 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 down. rocket to really be. One is for the glory, two and three. We're gonna break it up tonight.
This is Local Voices with a glance back at World War II with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Love is such a funny thing, you find it everywhere. There's so much of the stuff around, it's even in the air. Because I love a uniform above all other things, I looked around until I found a pair of silver wings. I fell in love with the airman who had big blue eyes. I used to watch him doing crazy things in the skies. We went for a spin way up in the blue. What happened there is my affair and I'm not telling you. We flew around and round and round and looped the loop by heck. And when we straightened out, I wound up hanging round his neck. I fell in love with an airman who had big blue eyes. But I'm nobody's baby now. He was so strong and tall. He wasn't worried cause he knew a little rain must fall. I fell in love with an airman who had big blue eyes. But I'm nobody's baby now. Should have said she's nobody's baby then.
Right. Nobody's baby.
I'm nobody's baby. I'm nobody's baby now.
Break of day, they're off and away into the gray clouds flying, flying forth away to the north. Sound of their engines dying over the mountains. Keeping the skyways free, so we are waiting till they return. What will their tidings be? The victory roll, the victory roll. Here come the Spitfires back from patrol. Look up quick, the victory roll. So lovely to see, for three and then three. Here come the Spitfires home from the sea. Home for tea, the victory roll. flying low beneath a cloud, hops below all proud, into view against the blue with their engines roaring loud. The victory roll, the victory roll. Here come the Spitfires home from patrol. Look up quick, there's the victory roll.
Take a glance at the past and present with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Nicely well, we'll thank a small hotel together.